Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the April 27th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase. As always, joined by Nick, and also joined by our occasional special guest, Romer. Nick Romer, how are you guys doing?
Doing great, Chase. Good to be back. The off-season podcasts are always fun. Like, we don't have a game to break down, but obviously we got some roster movement and, you know, some recruiting news as well with the summer AAU circuit starting up here, and we're so happy to have Romer just because he's super knowledgeable about this stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. Everything is going in full force. Transfer roster movement, the AAU circuit. It's, you know, there's going to be plenty of movement and a lot of recruiting updates. And here we are, ready to talk about it.
Yeah, and Romer is definitely Mr. I mean, I don't think I've ever met or spoken with or know about anyone who's more knowledgeable when it comes to the AAU circuit and just, assessing, projecting these prospects at this stage. So he is phenomenal, and we're so privileged to have him on here. But before we get to those, because this is kind of a special podcast and we're going to be covering the recruiting for 2023 and 2024 pretty heavily, we probably should be talking, we should just address, because it's been a while. It's been a few weeks. We should just address what's been going on with USC. And the only technical movement is that Isaiah Mobley entered the NBA draft and announced he's signing with an agent. So he is no longer going to be with USC. I think we should probably just say very briefly that he had a really great career. It only lasted 3 years, unfortunately, but really great career as a Trojan. Improved every single year, came in kind of an interesting spot because he came in a year ahead of his brother, but with Onyeka Okongwu, into a situation where we had a returning starter at the big, Nick Rakosevic. So initially we had floated the idea that we even tried this for a couple of games of having Isaiah play the three. That didn't work out. I mean, we're to an era now in basketball in general, especially the NBA, where, you know, if you can get one big on the court, it's a big deal. And we were trying to start three bigs. It didn't work out. So that was, you know, he had an adjustment. He had to go through that freshman season. He obviously wasn't going to get the minutes that Onyeka was going to get. Onyeka ends up, at the end of the season, getting drafted number six overall in the NBA. But the following year, Isaiah playing with his brother, full-time starter, improved steadily that year. By the end of the NCAA tournament, was a huge player for us. Arguably even like the MVP during that run in the tournament we had. And then last season, this past season, really, really strong, best player on the team, clearly. Until he got that Arizona game in that McHale in Tucson, where he got smacked in the face, broke his nose, had a concussion, came back and just wasn't quite the same. He was still team leader, still important part of the team, but his outside shooting really suffered. I think he was shooting over 40% before that injury. He came back and the rest of the way he shot, I think, under 25%. I got to check those numbers, but it was it was a big difference. And he turned the ball over quite a bit more too. And it kind of just discombobulated our offense. And it also, it was happening contemporaneously with kind of Chavez not being as effective down low. So that probably hurt his draft stock, quite frankly. And it was a tough time, but maybe he'll recover from that. I certainly wish him the best in the NBA. Nick, do you have any more thoughts on Isaiah before we move on?
I think you kind of covered it with him. Just a warrior of a player. I mean, like, he gutted out that Arizona game on the road. He obviously wasn't 100%, but with the broken nose, like, that's just shows a lot of toughness. So then, you know, his second half up in Eugene at Mad Knight Arena was one of the clutchest performances I've seen from a USC player, just in a half down the stretch, in a 1-point game, or a 1-point win after he got benched in the first half with foul trouble. So that's a game I'll remember from him. He just did everything in the second half and played like an All-American.
Romer, you got any thoughts?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just adding on to what you guys got to say. He actually is a Warrior. And like you also mentioned, he's improved as he went along during his tenure at USC. But, you know, like you also mentioned, the game at McHale after he busted his nose, he got the mask, and it seemed like that mask really just affected his play down the stretch. But that's still not anything to take away from his overall, you know, leadership and his overall, you know, stature as a player. He was our best player, and without him, we obviously wouldn't have any of the success that we had this past season.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So, okay, he's gone. He's not going to be on the team any longer. Yeah. And we're going to have to kind of come through a transition point with that, because, you know, I think the last time we had podcasted, we weren't sure. We thought he might be back, he might not. Now, we're in an interesting position because there are a few 2022 recruits available that at that position, but really more importantly, there are just a bevy of players in the transfer portal. And I mean, in the last 3 weeks, it's just gone nuts. I mean, it just keeps getting more nutty and more nutty in the players. I mean, if you were to take like the top 10 players in the transfer portal right now and put them on like one team, I mean, you could seriously see a scenario where that team would go undefeated next season. I mean, it's just like, that's the quality of the team, the players in the transfer portal, so high. But for reasons that are not entirely clear to us, USC does not seem particularly interested in participating in this process. And one way we kind of know that's the case is there've been a couple of guys that have gone to the transfer portal recently where they basically released all of the teams that had contacted them. And a great example of this is Washington State. Their big guy, who's very talented, Effie Abagidi, entered the transfer portal. And like the next day, I can't remember who it was. It was Jeff Goodman or somebody released a list of all the schools that had reached out to him. And like, and it was, I'm not joking. It was like a list of 35 to 40 different schools, and USC was not on the list, despite the fact that we don't have both of our bigs from last season are gone. So now we obviously have major recruits coming in, and we should probably talk a little bit too about what we've seen from Vince Uwuchukwu in these last couple high school All-Star games. But, you know, those are freshmen, and we're living in an era of the NCAA where it's the impact of freshmen is just somewhat limited. So, and we saw that in the final of the NCAA tournament, right, where who were the, you know, between the two teams, the only freshman that got on the court was Puff for North Carolina, right? I mean, did any of the freshmen even play in the championship game?
I think Puff's a sophomore too, right?
Okay, and there we go. And I'm wrong. So, we're just not playing in an era. I mean, look, Duke made the Final Four with three very prominent freshmen playing big roles, but they were, you know, top six, seven overall recruits. It's just rare. Last season, it was a big deal because I'm forgetting the point guard for Gonzaga.
Jalen Suggs
had the opportunity to be a freshman starter on a national championship team. And I don't think there'd been one since Duke. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's the case. A true freshman. I know Villanova had their center had been a redshirt freshman. He had missed this for sure because of an injury. But we're not living in an era where, I mean, I'm just kind of babbling here, but we're not living in an era where freshmen are make huge, deep impacts the way they used to in the past necessarily. So it'd be good to be looking for a you know, at least we had that spot on the roster, Isaiah's spot. And we did not even reach out to, even though every school, every like high major in the country reached out to Abagidi, we did not. So I think over the last 3 weeks, I'm trying to keep track of the total number of players that has been publicly released that USC has reached out to on from the transfer portal. And we just saw yesterday the same Bonaventure guard, Jaron Holmes, mentioned that SC had reached out to him. Now that's at the point guard position. That's the other spot we're looking for. But the only big I can remember recently mentioning SC was Kenneth Lofton Jr., the transfer from Louisiana Tech, who is working out in right near me or in Phoenix and has entered the NBA draft, but has not signed with an agent. So, and Romer and Nick, do you guys remember anyone else who's mentioned USC as a transfer that's mentioned USC reaching out to them in the last couple of weeks?
At least from my end, the only one that comes to mind is Alex Chiku, who kind of threw USC out there to try to gen up interest, I think. So it definitely hasn't been a lot of guys for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex is actually a Julius V guy who runs SoCal Academy. So he might have just wanted to throw USC out there. But I know there was some interest there in high school, but that never really came amount to anything. And even his play in Alabama, he didn't really amount to anything. So
yeah, and in fairness, he did have an Achilles injury. But
yes,
like if you even he came back from the Achilles injury and played 5 minutes. I think we've already talked about this extensively in the podcast. Like it's a weird situation with him. You watch his high school tape, they're like, okay, there's something there, but you needed a lot of development. I don't think he got there. I don't think SC was seriously interested. Then, you know, there was the point guard from Morehead State, Talon Cooper, but he has, and SC was, I think, seriously talking about bringing him on campus for a visit, and SC just didn't do it, and he ended up signing with Minnesota. So we don't know what's going on. We have theories abound. I don't know, Nick, what do you think we're doing here with these two spots we got up open right now?
I think what's really interesting is even the guys we've reached out to have been like not like the top quality guys, right? Like you talk about Talon Cooper versus like we didn't reach out to Kendrick Davis, who is, you know, a stud point guard, and he's going to Memphis. But obviously, like Kendrick is a superior player. One theory I come up with in the last minute, and I don't really know what's going on personally. Like I don't have any, these are all like theories and just me talking, but you know, just if you look at the Twitter follows, like, you know, it looked like we might've been interested in Myro Little, who was the Finnish point guard who recently committed to Baylor. So I kind of wonder if maybe we're trying to get into like the international market a little bit, and those kind of pop up late. Like you don't really know, you know, for reference, Little is rated on 24/7 as a top 40 recruit. He's ranked 35th. So obviously he's a legit guy, but I don't know if we're starting to swim in those waters. It'd be surprising because we haven't done that yet, but that's one possible theory. Another theory is maybe we have an in with someone who's declaring for the draft and is going to pull their name out of the draft. But yeah, I am surprised by the lack of kind of USC getting thrown out there. We definitely do seem to be focused on high school prospects still. And we'll talk about that extensively too, but those are kind of a few initial thoughts on my end.
And Romer, you have discussed, and I kind of agree with you here, that it seems like we may be, for the transfer market, be kind of limiting our focus on guys who like only have 1 year of eligibility left. So we would not in any way interfere with potential recruits for 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of my theory of it all. Just because we did show some interest with Cooper. And he only had about a year left. Was it like his COVID year?
Yeah.
That was all left. And My guess is they're really going all in on the 2023 point guards, and they don't want to like pretty much interfere with their eligibility. Because, you know, all these kids that are elite coming out of high school, they want to be promised a spot to start, a spot to run the show, and, you know, everything else that comes in between. So that's my guess.
Yeah, and one of the things that might potentially interfere with that is, and this is just a little, you know, a birdie told me this, was, you know, the Texas transfer, Devin Askew, who went to, you know, he's actually from up north in California, but played high school ball at Mater Dei, before leaving early to go to Kentucky, and then, you know, did like a one, he basically did a Johnny Juzang, but instead of transferring back to UCLA, he transferred to Texas, and now he's leaving Texas. He apparently has reached out to the staff, or someone on his behalf has reached out to the staff. You know, I think there was a lot of trepidation about taking him for a variety of reasons, including that he's coming in with three more, wherever he goes, he has three more years of college eligibility. There's zero sign that he is ready to leave at any point for the NBA. He does not appear to be on that trajectory at this point. So he would really potentially interfere with like some sort of high school recruit we're trying to make for like 2023 and 2024. He's the kind of guy that he's not a flashy player at all. And he looks like the kind of player that, like, if he ends up being like a quality high, like power conference starter, it's going to be like year four, year five of his college experience, which means he's still got development to go. That's not what we need in the transfer portal right now. I think you'd agree, Nick. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, but then again, it wouldn't shock me if we took him, I guess.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if we did take him. He really struggled offensively, especially last year at Texas. It was just, you know, kind of tough sledding for him with the shooting, and he's not a very explosive athlete. I did think he got legitimately better defensively at Texas from his freshman year at Kentucky, but still, like, I don't think that warrants taking him and committing to him for the next couple of years.
Okay, so there's a couple other interesting things floating out there. One, Julian Phillips is still technically on the market. Now, he did a mini visit to South Carolina over the weekend, and then he started a very important official visit to Auburn on Monday, which I think has concluded. There is a lot of scuttlebutt that Auburn's ready to pounce and grab him. And it makes some level of sense that he would be an Auburn Tiger because he was previously committed to be an LSU Tiger. And a lot of the LSU Tigers, after that situation fell apart, are migrating their way over to the Auburn Tigers. And, you know, just putting it out there that Bruce Pearl does not exactly have the squeakiest clean reputation. So
what about Will Wade, Chase?
Well, he is squeaky clean compared to Will Wade, but if you're going to commit to Will Wade, it would not surprise me if you subsequently committed to Bruce Pearl. Let me put it that way. So he may very well be off the table here soon. The interesting wrinkle here is that his coach at Link Academy, who's from the Kansas City area, is apparently going to become a coach at K-State this summer. K-State thinks that they can get a visit from him like early next week or mid next week or maybe next weekend. I bring that up because the longer he goes without like actually committing to Auburn, the longer it's like, okay, maybe this is truly up in the air. Now, that being said, I think in the LSU case, he had visited there in June of 2021, waited the entire summer, then took visits to SC and I think Tennessee in the fall, and then ended up committing to LSU anyway. So we just don't know. But I mean, this seems to be an NIL heavy importance recruitment. And I don't know where SC stands right now with doing that for Julian Phillips, but it's possible that we're kind of leaving that spot open for Julian Phillips until, you know, I don't know. Romer, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the interesting thing with Julian Phillips and his coach at Link and him going potentially going to K-State, he was actually the one of the founders of MoCan Elite. So I guess there's some kind of bridge there that they're trying to form, K-State, they're trying to get players. But as far as Julian Phillips to USC, I honestly don't think it's going to happen. Auburn looks like they're going to go grab him, like you mentioned. And, you know, it's all about NIL, and it's going to be interesting if they all end up there and we're actually going to play Auburn next season.
Yeah, that's right. We do have them on the schedule. Yeah. You know, now I will say the Auburn mods were also very confident about the Tennessee transfer. Brian, is it Huntley Hatfield?
Brandon Huntley Hatfield.
Yeah. And they thought they had a really good shot with him because they're also pursuing, obviously, Julian Phillips and the other Morehead State, much better Morehead State transfer, Johnny Broom. And they thought of those three guys. The Tennessee transfer, who's probably the least ready to go, maybe, I don't know, was, they thought they had the best chance with him. And then he committed to Louisville this week as this kind of a surprise. So now Auburn has, you know, they've got Traore from LSU. I think they may have another big already in place, and they're going after Johnny Broom too. So I don't, And then they have Chance Westry coming in. They have their guards back from last season. So that might be a little bit of a crowded situation for Julian Phillips, but who knows? You know, the LSU situation would have also been crowded.
Look, I mean, the SEC's got so much NIL money floating around, you know, with the revenue they get from football. And look, I'm not even saying like this shouldn't be the case. Like, you know, if other schools are unhappy about the NIL situation, then they should up their games, like, and get in the game. I mean, it's you got more money kind of flying around that's not as shady. And I think that's good for the sport.
I agree with that. Although I have to say, it doesn't appear to me that Lincoln Riley is having too much problems finding ways to get transfers to come. Like, I do occasional searches on my Twitter account for USC transfer. And the last 2 weeks is basically just repeated Lincoln Riley tweets of it, the fight on symbol.
And he's actually getting kids from the SEC to come in.
That's true. Yeah, he is. He is. Okay. So I guess this is a good time to segue into class of 2023, because one of the first kids I want to talk about is someone who actually, there's a couple of them that we may actually be trying to press for that open point guard position. Our longtime big target at point guard has been, and I guess we should talk about him just right away, Isaiah Collier from Georgia, from Marietta. You know, arguably one of the top players in the state of Georgia, which is a very important state for basketball now, has looked great as a point guard prospect. Strong, commanding handle, has played well in the EYBL. I'm going to throw it right to you, Romer. What are your thoughts on Isaiah Collier?
Oh, he's amazing. I watched a few of his games over the weekend, and it's so effortless with him, whether getting to his spots, breaking down defenders, taking mid-range jump shots, creating for his teammates on the fast break or in the half court. It's just so effortless with him. And he's also, I believe, the Skill Factory, which is his AAU team, right? Came away undefeated over the weekend.
He's definitely the leader of that team. There's no question.
Yeah, he is. He was over here averaging almost 20 points a game, shooting 55%. And he was shooting about 45% from three, to go along with averaging 8 assists. So he's a complete package.
Yeah. So Nick, you, I think, have said, I agree with this, that a couple of things. One, early ratings of Collier misrated him. He was far too low. He should have been rated much higher. In fact, there was a lot of mistakes made with the 2023 class as far as ranking the players. And that maybe resulted in some of the bigger names schools not pursuing Collier. And two, there's this interesting situation with Collier having a Southern California connection, and now UCLA, as they've been doing recently, has hopped on and trying to get involved with a player USC's recruiting.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that more with another player who they just offered today. But with Collier, I think you're right. He's the most naturally gifted point guard passer, I think, in several classes here. I'm struggling to think of a point guard prospect who sees the floor quite like him. He's just got amazing court vision. The question with him, I think he's not an elite athlete. He's a good athlete, but it's kind of been the shooting. Like, how good is his shot? Are his shot mechanics translatable to shooting at higher levels? And he's really answering that with this AAU season. I mean, Romer brought up his 3-point percentage. He's hitting deep threes, like, with NBA range. So that's a really good sign for his development. Like, quite frankly, the 24/7 rankings has his teammate Kanan Carlisle ranked ahead of him. That's nonsense. I mean, Isaiah is a way better player right now. And projects as a better player. He's a 6'3 point guard, and Carlisle's a 6'2 combo guard. He's the kid who's committed to Stanford. So I think he's a legitimate top 10 to 15 prospect in the class. I think he's better than Kylan Boswell too. The kid who I think I might be better than him at point guard is Robert Dillingham. And we'll talk about him too, because we've been kind of tracking him, but he's just kind of a next level athlete and has a really good jump shot. But yeah, really impressed with Isaiah Collier. To touch on the point, Chase, that you mentioned, UCLA following us with offers, definitely seems to be the case with Collier. I know the UCLA staff has already done an in-home visit. That is a relationship that USC's had a longer relationship with him than UCLA. So that might be something that plays to USC's advantage. You also have the fact that UCLA has Dylan Andrews coming in, and he's really a lead guard. I know UCLA are trying to pitch Collier that they can play together. I don't know if that's as clean of a fit as they're saying, because Collier is a, you know, slam dunk point guard. Would Andrews want to move off the ball? I think that gets kind of dicey. Whereas USC kind of can hand them the keys from day one. Other players here, Alabama, they've been pretty involved here. They have a ton of guards right now, so I'm not sure how that's going to work. I know Auburn's been mentioned in the past. They're not really as frequently mentioned there. But then Cincinnati has been mentioned a good amount as a school to watch out for. They're kind of going all in for him and pitching him, you know, the keys and selling him on a move to the Big 12. And I think he's already visited there once or twice. So definitely have to keep an eye on them as well.
Yeah. And for those who haven't seen him, Isaiah Collier has a game that's, you know, he's not all that unlike McKinley Wright, except for his jumper is just much cleaner at this point. But that's like when you're talking about like just strength and body control and kind of handle control and vision, that's kind of what you're seeing with Collier. So if you imagine McKinley Wright with a better jumper, that's kind of my version of what Collier looks like. Nick mentioned him already. So one of the top players in the class is a guy that Kanye convinced to go to his startup academy out in Simi Valley, Donda Academy, Robert Dillingham. He's from Charlotte, I believe. He's an elite athlete. There's no question about that. He's an NBA athlete and a high probable one and done wherever he goes, in my opinion. He is also very young. He's actually doesn't even turn, I believe. He does not turn 18, and he just turned 17 in January, I believe. So Romer, I'm going to throw it back to you. Your thoughts on Robert Dillingham?
Oh, he's probably one of the best shot creators in high school I've ever seen, especially for someone so frail. He's not little by no means, but he's, like we mentioned off air, he's physically underdeveloped. And he just turned 17, or isn't going to turn 17, so he's still pretty young. But he's just amazing. I always thought he was going to end up at North Carolina just because of the ties over there and being from the CP3 program. But that didn't happen. He ended up coming to the NC State, and obviously he backed out. And I was actually surprised that we're actually in on him. It does make sense with him being local, quote-unquote, here at Donda. The update did read with him that he's kind of interested. He wants to check out the campus, and he knows the fact that there's playing time available, and he seems like it's kind of like a curiosity kind of thing. So I'm kind of not holding my breath until he actually gets on campus, because Kentucky looks like they are on him pretty tough.
Yeah, what, Nick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, really echo what Romer said. I know I've comped him just offline at Darius Garland, 6'2", 165 guard, really good shooter. I mean, like, he's cat quick too, can get to the rim, but he's an awesome shooter. And that's gonna translate immediately to the college game. The other interesting thing with him is there's been some talk about him reclassifying in the past. He's kind of shot that down recently, but oftentimes, you know, guys don't telegraph that. They kind of shoot it down and they do it. So just got to keep your eye on that. If he does reclass, he probably becomes the most intriguing prospect in the 2022 class, simply because he would be ineligible for the upcoming draft in 2023. He would have to wait till 2024. So you would get him for 2 years, even though, so he's a one and done talent who you'd get for 2 years. I can't think of a prospect in the 2022 class I would prefer over him, given that as a, you know, brewing situation. Romer mentioned Kentucky being, you know, all over him. I think they sent three coaches to his last game. What's happening there is they thought they had this huge insurmountable lead for DJ Wagner, the son of DeJuan Wagner, who played at Memphis under Coach Cal. But there's a family tie to Kenny Payne, and a rumor that Kenny Payne's going to hire Milt Wagner, who's the grandfather of DJ Wagner, as their third assistant. So I think Nolan Smith has a tie to the family. He's also on staff now at Louisville. Kenny Payne has a tie. So if they hire Milt Wagner, just forget about it. He's going to Louisville, but it sounds like that's the way he's trending right now. So they're shifting their focus to Dillingham. I think with them involved, that's just going to be tough. They've already shown to have a pretty good NIL situation over to Kentucky. So obviously, like, he's a very talented kid, absolutely worth pursuing, trying to bring on campus. But yeah, like Romer said, I'm not holding my breath on this one.
Okay, so a few things here, because this I think is important. Well, one, not as important, but it's funny, on Milt Wagner. Milt Wagner, for those of you who don't know, he was a very important part of Louisville's 1986 national championship team. I was back in those days when I was a youngster, a little kid. USC's basketball was not very good at all, and I was kind of a Louisville Cardinal fan back then. And Milt Wagner was an important player. Obviously, his son played with Cal, so that's the history there. But Kenny Payne was a player for Louisville who came in a couple of years later. So there is a huge Louisville tie-in there. So I would not be surprised at all if DJ Wagner ends up at Louisville. I think that's the way it's trending. Okay, so here's what's interesting about this reclassification issue. This, first of all, we've seen something like this happen. It just happened this past season with Imani Bates at Memphis. And obviously that experiment did not go off particularly well. I do have to say, playing point guard power conference basketball is tough, and that's going to be tough for Dillingham. He will have certain advantages over Bates because Bates is somewhat playing positionless basketball. And that's a tough, that's something you kind of have to develop over time. It runs into the issue that Nick and I have talked about many times about how the one and done wing player is often not worth going after because, but he's so NBA sought after that he's kind of being elevated for the just how, you know, the size of his body that he's at this stage, and he's not quite developed into his body. He needs to develop longer. And by the time he does that, he's NBA ready. He's gone. He's gone from your program. It's a little bit different with Dillingham. He is an NBA. He's an NBA body in the sense that he's an athletic freak and will be a very easy NBA player, but he doesn't need to grow into like a 6'8 body. I mean, he's right now the size he needs to be. He's grown into it. He's fine. Now, that being said, he's only, you know, 17 years old and he's not going to turn 18 until 2023, till January 2023. So here's what's interesting about this reclassification thing. I don't think it's going to happen, but if it were to happen, normally you'd say, look, Kentucky's got a ton of money. There's the horse racing money. There's all this stuff, ton of money behind them. They can get who they want. But if he were to reclassify, I actually think that this would give USC an advantage. And here's why. Kentucky has Sevier Wheeler coming back at point guard. So there's already kind of an established point guard there. And Wheeler can't really play any other position besides point guard. So there'd be a serious question about whether or not, I mean, Kentucky's obviously would take Dillingham, but they could they really offer him the minutes and like giving him the keys to the car? They can't, not really. The other thing is, in the case of Dillingham, he is a high enough ranked recruit that if he were to reclassify to 2022 and say he wanted to go to USC, you'd start to see a little bit of the same phenomenon we saw with Caleb Williams, which is all of a sudden this guy's high profile enough that big name brands might be interested. So rather than having to compete with like the biggest car dealership in the, you know, state of Kentucky, they may, or we would have Beats behind him or some very large financial services company or some tech company, potentially with a kid like Dillingham, which you're not going to get with a, you know, other potential NIL prospects. They're not going to be interested in, but they might be interested in Dillingham because Dillingham could be like a top five overall NBA pick. And he's going to be in college in Los Angeles for 2 years. So that's just something to watch. I still think the idea of him reclassifying at the, you know, he's so young and we just went through the Monty Bates thing. I don't think it's going to happen, but I have got to wonder, is that floating around in the coach's head? Is that why we're coaches' heads? Or is that why we're not going after, you know, more transfer portal point guards? And are they thinking, and we've just kind of hopped back into the Dillingham thing. Are they thinking, hey, we can really get this guy? I don't know. I mean, look, they could, Kanye could be sponsoring his NIL, you know, we just don't know. But it's the kind of thing is he's already high profile enough that he matches Los Angeles in a way that other, you know, college basketball recruits and targets do not. All right. Said my piece there. We'll cover two players together. Also the guard position. One SC was looking at very seriously, but then was supposed to commit to Virginia. Hasn't done that yet. I guess he still will, but it's London Johnson, from Norcross, Georgia. Very good looking recruit, by the way, for the 2023. And then there's, Braylon Green, who's from Michigan, but I think is playing at one of the prep schools in Arizona. So, Romer, why don't you walk us through those two guys?
Yeah. With London Johnson, it's kind of interesting. We were talking off air that I was doing some research, and he actually went up against Isaiah Collier and Kenan Carlisle in something called the Battle of Georgia 16U Championship, and he outplayed both of them. He also plays for the national team in Jamaica, and he recently had a 40-point performance. So he's a big-time scorer. He's a big-time player, but I don't know where his recruitment is going right now, because he was also supposed to make an announcement on the first that didn't happen. But with Braylon Green, he was another kid, another one of those Julius V kids that was supposed to transfer over to SoCal Academy this past season. But I think he was only here for like a week, but then he ended up in Arizona. I don't know where his recruitment's going. Is it Michigan State still? No idea. Arkansas was involved a bit. So it's kind of gone radio silent with him ever since he moved over to Arizona.
Nick, do you have anything you want to comment on with London Johnson or Braylon Green?
Nothing really with Braylon Green. Don't really know enough about him. With London Johnson, I did just see he got a recent 24/7 crystal ball to go pro from Travis Branham. So I kind of wonder if one of these pro leagues, Overtime Elite or the G League, stepped in. That was 3 days ago with a 7 confidence. So they might have drop the bag on him, and that's really a loss for Tony Bennett more than anybody.
Yeah, and he's obviously, Tony Bennett has really been struggling with recruiting. I guess it should be said that there's been a trend here with the G League, and since the NIL has developed, there's going to be a real big question about the viability of a team like G League Ignite. Now this past year, they did have, you know, they have some five quality players, four who are going to get drafted in this draft, and then Scoot Henderson's going to be drafted like top two, top three next season. So that turned out okay for them. But, you know, from what we talked about offline, they're apparently already approaching Jazz Gardner, who's, you know, borderline top 100 recruit. I mean, that was not the purpose of G League Ignite, was to recruit, borderline top 100 recruits. They were supposed to be going after guys who are like ready-made NBA players. And if they're now, and I'm not sure about London Johnson, because obviously he's had some very strong performances, and maybe he is like a legitimate like one and done type player, but he's not like ranked in like a one and done type ranking right now. So it does seem to be a little bit of a stretch to for the G League Ignite to be like making a guy like him like the foundation of what their team is going to be next season. The other piece to this is the Canadian players. So, I mean, it seems like I'm wondering if we're going to get to a point where like G League Ignite is just like the young guys they have are just like the Canadian guys who maybe not don't want to subject themselves to the NBA draft right away, but don't want to play American college basketball. We're seeing that right now with I can't think of his name, but a guy who played in the Hoop Summit game for the world team. And was looking at Arizona and Kentucky. And then I don't think Arizona is going to take him, and I doubt Kentucky will either. So, and he's a Canadian. So anyway, I just don't know what the future is of G League Ignite at this point. Overtime Elite apparently still has an endless bag of cash to just throw at players to play basketball games that nobody watches. So that's interesting. All right, let's move along. So this is going to be one of the more, the next two guys are probably the two most controversial names on the list that we're going to discuss tonight. First one, AJ Johnson, Taft High School in Los Angeles, the half brother of Jalen Green. Kind of an odd situation with what's going on with his recruitment, but he's already starting to blow up. He looks like he could very well be potential eventual first round NBA draft pick. Not for sure, possible. But there are questions about something because the LA schools have not hopped on him yet. So what do you know, Romer? What do you think about AJ Johnson?
I think he has limitless potential. His coach, Derek Taylor, who's actually been around to coach players like Jordan Farmar, Spencer Dinwiddie, rest in peace, Brendan Taylor. He actually said that at the same stage, along with Spencer Dinwiddie, he's ahead in terms of overall development. And you see it too when he's playing. He's athletic. He's very lanky. He's sure of himself when he's out on the court. But, it's a big question mark with me as well, as far as why both USC and UCLA have kind of like slow played him or haven't showed any interest.
Yeah. And Nick, I don't know, you expressed some skepticism about this, but I do have to say that, you know, he publicly came out and said his two dream schools were Kentucky and UCLA, and UCLA is not offering.
Yeah. And I know that some UCLA bloggers have, said he's unrecruitable for UCLA. What does that mean? I'm not really sure. Is that just we have other priority targets and we don't want to, you know, like trash the kid? Does that mean he has an academic thing? I don't really know. Does that mean he's got like, you know, a whole entourage? I'm not really sure. I think his play definitely warrants an offer from both LA schools. He seems like a top 50 player. Really quick athletically, kind of has a baby face, and like that's not necessarily a bad thing because just kind of shows that once he gets stronger, like he might just be a monster and, you know, develop some strength and physicality. Jump shot looks good. You know, like there's some risk with him that, you know, maybe we're talking about a lottery pick in a year and then you have a one and done point guard where you don't really get him multiple years. But, you know, I think if he blows up into a one and done player, I think that's a win. Like that means he had a really good year for you. So, definitely don't know the ins and outs of the recruitment and why USC and UCLA haven't offered. I do know that Texas felt comfortable offering and they're not a terrible academic institution by any means. So, you know, Chris Beard, you know, dipped his feet into that. So I don't know. I think definitely a top 50 player, potentially higher than that. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I will say the one thing about Texas is they have, there's distance there. So there might be an issue that's like,
yep,
a local issue. So I don't know. And it's not really fair to speculate. All I know is that was a comment that was made. And it is peculiar, you know, that SC and UCLA are both not showing much of an interest. Okay. The most famous player in the class of 2023, Mikey Williams, returning to California, has already visited campus, made a big show of it, huge, huge following on Instagram. That all being said, his stature as a kind of elite prospect has faded some. He's still, I think, a top 20 rated prospect. I'm not sure he's a legit top 20 prospect. Maybe he is. Kind of a combo guard. I would not really want him being your primary point guard. But look, he's back in California. He's from San Diego County. He's shown interest in being here. He's a guy with a ginormous following on social media. It makes a lot of sense for him to play college basketball for that reason, so he can exploit that social media following. I mean, I guess he could go play for Overtime Elite or the G League Ignite and post videos of him dunking in those games, but you know, there's not going to be a crowd but like in the state, in the arena. So I don't know. What are your thoughts here, Romer?
Well, doesn't he have a shoe deal with Puma?
I think he does. I think you're right. I think he does have
a shoe deal. Yeah, he does, because he recently suited up for LaMelo Ball's AAU team. They're a Puma sponsored team. They don't know how long he's going to be on the team, whether or not it's for the weekend or for the long term. But his father actually was quoted in one of those local papers somewhere in Fayetteville, said that he's looking to have his son play college 1 year before he goes pro.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense, right? Because that's where what he wants is eyeballs, you know, for his to exploit all this stuff. What do you think of him as a player? I mean, he was, you know, as a freshman, he was a huge sensation. Freshman high school, he was a huge sensation.
Oh, yeah. He could obviously put the ball in the basket. You know, he has moves on moves on moves, and he consistently works on those moves. It looks like he's gotten way stronger than over the last few years, and he could absorb contact. But like you said, he's not one of those players that you want to be your primary guard. He's ball dominant, doesn't really create for others. He just looks for his own shot. But he is a good player, and like I said, he knows how to put the ball in the basket. He's kind of like a poor man's Monte Ellis. Not as quick, a little bit stronger, not as shifty, but you know, he's capable of giving you 20, 30 points.
What are your thoughts here, Nick?
Yeah, really echo what Romer said. He's a very good, difficult shot maker, late clock. Mm-hmm. There's some value in that in the college game. If you just don't have anything going on offense, he can shoot like a decent percentage late clock. I do think he can pass. He just doesn't pass very often, right? So like the highlights you see are of him scoring, but like he does make some real reads when he decides to pass. It's just not very often, right? So I would take him as the 2022 point guard if he were to reclass, if the other option is to stand pat. That being said, definitely not my favorite option per se, but he, Chase, like you mentioned with Robert Dillingham, like Mikey Williams will put butts in the seats and maybe get you some NIL money as a school. So.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Well, let's move over to kind of more of the wing now. The player that kind of has got the most talk, at least amongst us offline, and a guy who I really wish we had done more to, recruit stronger earlier, is Andrej Stojakovic, the son of Peja. So Andre's lives up, you know, near the Sacramento area where his dad was a player for the Kings very famously. He's playing for Compton Magic, which is a huge advantage for USC. This really puts us into the game. It seems from recent updates, you know, were being talked about seriously about him, he has completely blown up. I mean, over the, you know, just since SC offered, which was like 3 weeks ago, he's getting, you know, it's gone from, you know, getting offers from the likes of Texas to like now he's getting offers from Kentucky, UCLA. So he is completely blown up as a prospect. To me, he's looked really great. And I'm like I said, I wish we had made a bigger push earlier. We were not late, so to speak, but like Stanford kind of got in there before us. That all being said, I'm not sure how much it matters once you have Kentucky like sniffing. I do think with Stojakovic, it's not like a clear, like he's going to go to Kentucky type situation because of the pedigree. His father was an NBA All-Star. So he doesn't really need to have the like Kentucky cachet attached to him. I think he might just be willing to be like, oh, look, I've already got a huge name. The moment he steps on the court, if he's starting and people hear the name Stojakovic, they're going to know right away who he is. So he doesn't really need that Kentucky cachet. Maybe he'll take it. I don't know. It's a big allure. But so, Romer, what are your thoughts on him as a prospect? And what are your thoughts on him as, you know, where he might be thinking about going?
Oh, he's lights out. I didn't really get to watch him leading up to until when he actually just showed up playing for Compton Magic at Linwood against Strive for Greatness. Oh man, that kid was just lighting it up. As soon as the ball hit the floor, he made like what, 5-10, the first like few points for them. And I was like, oh wow, this kid's for real. But he actually didn't get noticed by USC until they had that little tournament in Arizona, like when Corona Centeno ended up winning. So that was like the first of anyone's ever heard of him. But when you think of Peja, you think of a shooter, right? Just a straight shooter, 6'10". You know, I was a big Laker fan back in the days when they would go at it with the Kings, and that's all he would do, pick and pop, pull up. But with Andrej, he's great on the open floor. He has handles. He could break down defenders. He could shoot off the dribble, shoot off a screen. He's a complete package. He's going to keep shooting up the rankings. And it's interesting with his recruitment. Like you mentioned already, he doesn't need that Kentucky cachet. I mean, it's great, but one of his responses was, oh, that's a great offer. It just means I'm doing something right. But when he speaks of USC and Stanford, he's kind of more driven to the sense where he wants a school or a program where his family could watch him.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be, look, it's true of both Stanford and USC, because he even mentioned international, like family flying in internationally.
Yep.
It's very easy to get to Los Angeles, very easy to get to the Bay Area, obviously, for Stanford. Hopefully, this is like the thing we're talking about, Nick. You know, it's just a matter of time here before Jared Haas gets fired. But I'm just hoping Stojakovic doesn't like commit to hit them before he gets fired.
Yeah, no doubt. There's a risk there. I think so. Stanford like kind of had some early traction, it seemed like, but we technically did offer him before Stanford officially offered him. So I don't think it's like the case where Stanford's got some massive advantage due to recruiting him early, kind of like they did with Zaire Williams, where they were the first, you know, school on Zaire Williams, and all that. So I think with Andre, he's mentioned, so he's been blowing up, right? Getting offers kind of left and right here. He talked in an article about wanting to visit Tennessee because he liked Kennedy Chandler, and UConn because he liked the way Rudy Gay played for the Kings. I was a Sacramento guy. I mean, those just don't seem like very serious options. Like, I just can't really see him going to UConn or Tennessee unless they, usually I would say unless they drop the NIL bag, but it's not like his family's starved for cash or anything like that. So I don't really see it with those schools. As you mentioned, he's talked about like going to a school with kind of like international access so family can fly in to see him play. That seems like a legitimate advantage for USC and UCLA. UCLA just offered him today, so they're trying to get in here as well. If they get Dusty Stromer, you'd have to think that hurts their chances a little bit. Then again, I think Andre is a better player than Dusty Stromer. So I don't know. it feels like a winnable recruitment to me, but it's just a long way to go, and it doesn't seem like there's going to be an early decision here.
Yeah, a couple of things, too. I remember, I think it was Tracy Pearson had made the comment that he was looking at, you know, UCLA was evaluating at their wing position, Stromer and Brady Dunlap from Notre Dame, right? That's where he's at. Or is he at Harvard-Westlake?
Harvard-Westlake.
Harvard-Westlake. And then Stojakovic. And Tracy said, you know, I think everyone agrees that Stromer's the number one there, Dunlop's number two, and Stojakovic number three. Now, this was, I think, right after that game against that first Compton Magic game that everyone kind of saw. But even before that, I remember looking at video saying Stojakovic is better than Stromer. You know, also because, and this is the other point I was going to make, Stojakovic, I think last year when he originally hit the like rankings was like listed at 6'4 or 6'3. Now they're listing him at like 6'6, 6'7. His dad is 6'10. Yeah. He's still growing. Yeah. We don't know how tall he's going to be by the time he gets to college. And as Romer pointed out, he's got all of his dad's shooting, but he's also got a dribble drive game. I mean, he could really, I mean, if he ends up being a 6'9 recruit that can just bomb it from three and drive to the basket and dunk it on people, I mean, he's going to be like a top five pick. I mean, he is, we don't know where he's going exactly, but like when Pearson made that comment, like, oh, you know, Stromer is definitely number one here. I'm like, no, he's not. I mean, that's just crazy to me. And I guess now UCLA has decided we can't not recruit this guy because he's going to end up being one of the top players in the state for 2023. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, just another comment on that too. Like, yeah. Stromer is also a 1 year holdback kid. So Andre is probably a year younger than him. Like, yes. So there's that going in favor of his development and his progression. Just so, yeah, like I think slam dunk offer by our staff. And I think like, if you look at the rankings are all out of whack because of COVID and haven't been updated. So I think he'll be in the top 50 at a minimum, I think at least in these major publications, and he very well could like jump into five-star status with the next update.
Yeah. Okay. So we're getting long on time and I don't want to, you know, short shrift on 2024. I'm going to name four more wings outside of the LA area that we have shown interest in. I think we've maybe even offered all four of these guys. Throw it to you, Romer, just go through them and you can talk about them a little bit and what your thoughts are. Cody Williams, who's out here right near me in Gilbert, playing TJ Power, Solomon Ball, who we offered, I think, last weekend, and Osiris Grady.
Yeah, Cody Williams, his brother actually plays for Santa Clara, right?
Yes.
Jalen Williams?
Yes, Jalen Williams.
Oh, man, that kid's a player. But, yeah, he's an interesting prospect. He plays just like his brother. He's had a good – EYB, AAU showing as of late. He plays for Vegas Elite. Osiris Grady, he is an interesting name because he put it out there that he took an unofficial visit to USC before the beginning of the high school season, and he wants to take an official visit. He's I like his game. He reminds me of Jordan Walsh, who was at SoCal Academy for a little bit. And who is the – oh, Solomon Ball. Yeah, he's a name that kind of just recently shot himself up on the charts. He made the third-team All-Indianapolis EYBL team. He's averaging about 18 points, 5 rebounds. I watched a little bit of his highlights. He could put the ball on the floor. He has a bit of point forward skills. He could create. He's pretty comfortable taking shots from the perimeter. But – you know, he's also a slasher as well.
And the other one was TJ Power.
Oh, TJ Power. Yeah, he plays for, the BABC, I believe. He's another. East Coast guy. I think, is he a power forward?
He's kind of like a wing. I mean, he's 6'7", you know, kind of mm-hmm. one of those, you know, 3-4 combo guys.
He's up in New England somewhere, right?
Yeah, but I was just looking at his stats. He's also shown out as well. He plays for that Boston Athletic Basketball Club team that Nerlens Noel played for a few years ago. But and we recently offered him, I believe, just this past weekend.
Yeah. Nick, do you have any thoughts on either Cody Williams or TJ Power, Solomon Ball, or Cyrus Grady?
So I'll start with Solomon Ball. Haven't seen any of him. So I'll definitely defer to Romer on that. Osiris Grady, he kind of flashed last year when I saw him. He was playing with Pop Isaacs and, you know, really stood out. I think they played Corona Centennial. I remember, correct me here, but at one of those tournaments. And he's a pretty active kind of, you know, 6'8 guy with some leaping abilities. So he could be a good 4-year guy. I'm a little skeptical with him just because of, you know, the Vegas thing with a lot of these, how these Vegas guys have been overrated, but you know, he's definitely a name to monitor. Have not seen TJ Power at all. I know he's, you know, blown up at these summer circuits, and I think Andy saw one of his games and pulled the trigger. And Cody Williams, bloodlines are intriguing just because of his brother Jalen. He looks like a really good athlete, you know, definitely seems like a guy to monitor. I'm a little surprised he hasn't blown up more and gotten the high major offers, just given the athletic talent and where he's ranked. But yeah, just another name to monitor.
So two other guys on the wing that SC has offered, but I don't think we're going to be seriously pursuing too much, is Brady Dunlop from Harvard Westlake, and then Curtis Williams from Etiwanda, who we've talked about in other podcasts. Roman, what are your thoughts on those two guys?
Yeah, those two guys are local kids. They definitely have stood out, have played well against local competition. But when it comes to stepping up to 17U, playing EYBL, playing in Adidas Circuit, they've kind of fizzled off. Even more so, I'm a bit disappointed with Williams, because he really played well at the Damien Classic. He was one of the best players in that tournament overall. But even towards the end of the season, when Etiwanda got knocked out in the playoffs, he didn't do anything in the game. He only scored like 6 points.
Yeah. On Curtis, he seems like the kind of kid that, you know, flashed at that one moment and then, you know, because he fizzled out, you know, maybe he's going to end up at like Oregon State or Washington State, a place like that, because, you know, he's like the guy that can really flash, but he just can't do it on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Because if you see him as a player, he has long arms, big hands, athletic, but he doesn't seem to have the motor to back it up.
Yeah. Nick, do you have any thoughts on those two?
Yeah, just echo your guys' sentiment on Curtis Williams. Just hasn't shown it the last couple months. With Brady Dunlap, I wasn't really sure why we offered him. I just kind of questioned the high major athleticism. Definitely he's a good shooter and all that, but he kind of reminds me a little bit of Jake Kyman at the same stage. Good shooter, but just kind of lacks the high major athleticism.
Yeah. Okay. So for bigs, I guess the main focus on our, you know, big recruitment, and maybe the guy that we're doing the best with in the class of 2023, is Isaiah Miranda. Nick and I have talked about him. We should probably talk about him alone. Romer, what are your thoughts on Isaiah Miranda?
Ton of potential. Looks like he's barely just scratching the surface. The biggest concern leading up to the summer was that his motor wasn't really all there, but he seemed to just put it all together. I watched a few of his highlights just recently, and he looks like he's getting more and more comfortable shooting from the perimeter, and he's also doing a good job defending the rim. So he's currently he's playing for the Rhode Island Elite team, their independent team, and Dino's Trigonis is all over that guy. He's probably going to get an invitation to his Pangos All-American camp, so definitely going to be looking forward to watching him play.
Nick, do you have any more thoughts you want to just talk about on Miranda?
He just looks like a potential top 5 player in the class when you look at his highlights. I mean, he's 7'1", he can move in space a little bit, he's got a good 3-point shot, he can rim protect. I mean, if it all comes together for him, the sky's the limit. I just don't know if he does it consistently enough, and that's why he's lagging in the rankings, but you know, it's hard to, you know, watch his video and not be super intrigued. And it seems like we're doing pretty well with him too.
Yeah. And Romer brought up a good point offline that, you know, his rankings are probably heavily affected by him playing independent circuit AAU ball and not one of the major circuits. If he was playing EYBL, he very well could already be a top, you know, 15 player. Okay. So other bigs, just should mention them, Baye from Colorado, and then the local kids, Jazz Gardner, Devin Williams. I don't know how seriously we're going to be pursuing these other guys. I guess if Miranda falls through, we have to do it more seriously. Romer, do you have any thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, Devin Williams hasn't shown much playing 17U for Team Why Not. I don't think he's a player that we should pursue, to be honest. He's probably kind of like a Colorado or Oregon State level player if you were to play in the Pac-12. Baye Fall, I don't know much about him. Did he get kicked out of his school?
I think he did, which is one of the reasons you're not seeing everyone all over him. I think UCLA had even offered him at one point, and now everyone's backed off.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because he was a five-star kid, but seeing that update about him getting kicked out of the team, that I don't know where he's playing. And who's that other kid that you mentioned?
Oh, Jazz Gardner.
Jazz Gardner. Oh, yeah. Jelani Gardner's son. He has kind of gotten better in shape, but I don't know how he actually ranks long term, because we did mention off air that the G League is starting to get some interest towards him. But I honestly feel that's kind of like a Jason Hart, Jelani Gardner kind of bridge, just to spark some interest towards his name. I watched him play a few times. Watched him play against Long Beach Poly when Payne Watson was there. He was pretty dominant, but Poly wasn't a big team. But I don't know. I just don't see it, to be honest.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
To echo Romer's sentiments. Definitely a good point with the Jelani Gardner Jason Hart relationship on that. Don't know if he's high major quality. It just seems like Isaiah Miranda is the guy right now, and it seems like we're the team that's kind of consistently showing up to his AAU games. I think he did have an official with Matt McMahon and the new LSU staff. I know he was recruited by the old LSU staff by Will Wade, but unless Kentucky offers him, I think you have to just feel good about our chances with him. And if we get him, I would shut it down with the big man recruitment. I would just thank the scholarship for 2024, just given how deep and loaded that class looks.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, that's our look at 2023. Let's just kind of not spend too much time, but, you know, get into some of these 2024 kids, because 2024 is a much, you know, more talented group for California. Although we should say that 2023 is kind of is developing in an interesting way, because you have Andre Stojakovic now and potentially Robert Dillingham being considered like a California recruit. So, you know, that's something to watch for. But 2024, more natural local kids being ranked high. That being said, one of the top guys everyone was looking at, Victorious Miller, is deciding to go play prep ball in Arizona. Right near me, Compass Prep.
Yes.
So I don't know what that means for his recruitment, but Romer, what are your thoughts on him?
No, he's one of those kids that's going to get the SEC to look at him, Duke to look at him, UNC to look at him. But I am hopeful, because his uncle is Lil Romeo. So hopefully there's still that strong connection there that will help us long term. He's a great player. He's so smooth, way advanced for his age. You could tell he's a kid that just lives, breathes, and sleeps basketball. He's just one of those kids that he's going to be a future, probably a top five, top 10 pick in the NBA.
Nick, do you have any thoughts?
Just a great athlete at 6'5". I mean, it's a true three-level scoring package with him, and he can, like, really shoot. Like, he's a real shooter, not a fake shooter. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll mention with him too, he does have a cousin who I think he's in the same class, Mercy Miller. So you got Victorious and Mercy, and Mercy's already committed to Houston. So I would even like maybe look out for Houston and try to make a play there with the family connection. But absolutely, I would recruit Victorious Miller. I mean, he's warranted of his top 10 ranking. probable one and done, but again, like maybe the kind of kid, given his family connection to Little Romeo, like appreciates LA and could be like another NIL build around kid. So I would absolutely recruit him.
Yeah, maybe we can get Damar in there trying to help us a little bit.
There you go.
Bring him around. Okay, let's talk about, we'll do these in packages, but two important kids to talk about, Jamari Phillips and Isaiah Elohim from Sierra Canyon. Romer, what do you, you know, thoughts? Where do you see them at this point?
Oh, Jamari is probably the best pure scorer in the class, maybe in the state. You know, the 2024 class alone in California, top to bottom, is heavy. And the ironic thing is playing for Paul Jordan, Deshaun Bryant, and all three of those kids have USC offers. And all three of them are probably going to be high major, well, getting offers from Duke and UCLA, North Carolina. But they're actually pretty fun to watch. They play unselfish, and you know they're obviously flashy. And that's probably if that team sticks together, going up to 17U, that's probably it. Could be a team that's going to compete for a Peach Jam.
Nick, any thoughts on Jamari Phillips, Isaiah Elohim?
Yeah, so Isaiah Elohim, definitely potential candidate for top player in the class. Sierra Canyon, kind of a, I would say he's a two or three, like, not like the most prolific shooter from three, but just can get into the lane like really easy and use his, you know, strength to score through contact. He's got a good mid-range game as well. So I think, yeah, UCLA, that's probably shaping up to be a UCLA-USC battle. We'll see if Kentucky jump in with him. But obviously, you know, potential top five pick, you're recruiting him. Jamari Phillips, yeah, like Romer touched on it, just ridiculously gifted scorer, really deep range. Like, I think the question with him is he a point guard? Is he a two? I think, you know, regardless, you're recruiting that guy. But if he becomes a point guard, that just makes him all the more prolific and a potential one and done. So really exciting player. UCLA offered him today. I believe we offered him in January, I want to say, but definitely a couple months back.
So a couple other local kids, one who I've watched a little bit of, this Rodney Brown Jr. at Rancho Christian, where the Mobley brothers went to high school. And then Liam Campbell, who's now at Harvard Westlake. Rodney Brown Jr. is interesting because I think he's a reclassification. He was originally 2023 and then reclassified down to 2024. That reclassification has allowed him to like kind of grow, like develop into his body a little bit, because he went through a growth spurt and you could kind of tell like this past season he struggled a little bit to find his body. But there was a comparison to with Alan Crabb. And I really think that's like kind of pretty on the money. Like he's one of a very long kid. He's going to end up at like 6'7", you know, and it really like a, you know, long arms wingspan, and he really shoot it from the outside. So he's going to be an interesting player and probably someone, depending on who else, you know, is available to SC, probably someone we really want to keep an eye on. Romer, I don't know if you've seen them. Would you have any thoughts on Brown? I know you've seen Campbell.
Yeah, I have seen Campbell, but Rodney Brown, he's a kid that's currently lining it up for the Under Armour Association. He plays for West Coast Elite, Ryan Silver's team. He's averaging around probably 23 to 24 arms. He looks the part, perfect. I remember that guy. He used to just have his way with us when he was at Cal. But long, he plays for same high school as Evan Mobley and Isaiah, right?
Yeah, yes, Rancho Christian.
Oh, yeah, Rancho Christian. So, yeah, he's a name to keep an eye on. But what's interesting is that Rancho Christian this past season, they didn't do too well in terms of wins and losses. I don't even think they made the playoffs. But
yeah, and if you watch the high school like highlights of him, they're not all that impressive. I think he's played a lot better for Ryan Silver. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Ryan's doing a great job promoting him, that's for sure.
Nick, any thoughts on these two guys?
So Liam Campbell, he actually transferred up. He was at Harvard Westlake. Now he's up in Idaho.
Idaho,
so,
yes.
Yes. So, you know, part of that makes me think like maybe Gonzaga jumps in on him, you know, just being kind of a semi-local school up there now. So I could definitely see that happening. He's really talented. He's done really well, you know, against pretty good competition in AAU circles. So ranked in the top 50 of 24/7. Yeah, he's at 35. So, yep, absolutely slam dunk kid that you want to recruit. I have not seen any Rodney Brown, but I think he's gotten ranked fairly high. So, you know, definitely a kid to keep an eye on and seems to have pretty good measurables.
Yeah, we got in early. And obviously, look, I mean, Eric, we have Eric Mobley on our staff, who's a pretty deep connection to Rancho Christian. Although, as I think Romer, I think we can say this, Romer, I don't think Ryan Silver is a huge fan of Andy Infield, but
he isn't.
so that brings an interesting twist to that recruitment. I don't know anything about these two kids from Wisconsin. Apparently, we're still recruiting Wisconsin kids. Nick Janowski and Ron Neupel. Romer, have you seen them? Do you have any thoughts on those two?
Oh, they play for Phenom U, same AU team as Seth Trimble and Kobe Johnson.
Well, as they need to, right? All the Wisconsin kids play for Phenom U.
Yeah. But, you know, those two are actually very talented. I watched a bit of their highlights. And Nupel looks like a great shooter, pick and pop, you know, create off the dribble, shoot off the dribble, shoot off the bounce. And Jawanski, he's a playmaker. I don't know how that's going to translate to the next level. It looks like those two are probably destined for a program like a Marquette or a Wisconsin.
Nick, have you seen these guys?
I've seen a little bit of Janowski, ranked 72 in the class on 24/7. So he's like a dude who has a decent reputation already. You know, Romer touched on it, you know, pretty good scoring package, even if he lacks the top end athleticism and is, you know, a little bit combo guardy. But the kind of guy I'd, you know, throw an offer out, but definitely wouldn't spend too much time on him unless you think you have like a real connection or shot.
And I guess the last two guys we're going to talk about are another Sierra Canyon kid, which is Trenton Flowers. And then these are more like bigs. And then Carter Bryant from Fountain Valley, who's kind of, you know, maybe starting to blow up a little bit. So, Romer, what are your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, Carter Bryant, he I remember his uncle back in the day, Trayvon Bryant. He was a McDonald's All-American out of Long Beach, Jordan. He kind of has a similar game as him. Could put the ball on the floor. And like I mentioned earlier, he plays on the same AAU team as Jamari Phillips and Isaiah Elohim. And his mid-range is actually pretty good for a player his size. He has a soft touch. I think he long-term, he's going to turn out to be a pretty good player. And the other kid, who was that other kid? I'm sorry.
Oh, Trenton Flowers.
Oh, Trenton Flowers. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he's playing up 17U for Kevin Durant's AAU team. He's teamed up with KJ Evans, who's a five-star out of 23 class. He's played pretty steadily. I like his upside. I like his height. I want to see him in a full year starting, playing consistent minutes at Sierra Canyon, especially with having that type of national schedule. So he's an intriguing player. He's definitely warrants the top 10 ranking that he has in the 2024 class.
Oh, any thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I think Romer kind of hinted at it with Flowers too. I mean, he's like a freak athlete, 6'8", big wingspan, but the production kind of isn't always there. So he's more of like a prospect and finished product, but definitely, you know, you could definitely envision him as an NBA lottery pick in a couple of years. I like him. I think Carter's a little more polished offensively, even though he's ranked lower, he's down at 24, but, you know, still a very good ranking. He's got a pretty good skill package. I think with Flowers, that's going to be a national recruitment, definitely a battle there. With Carter Bryant, it does seem like USC and Arizona have jumped kind of ahead right now. I think he's visited Arizona a couple of times already. USC got in on him early, and I think he's been on campus, but has definitely talked up USC as well. So absolutely the kid I would recruit hard. I think in, you know, just a few other names to mention before we wrap up here. There's Ja'Kai Howard. I'm just going through the list. I can just briefly touch on a few guys. There's Ja'Kai Howard, who's at the Donda Academy, who we seem to be recruiting. And We'll see what happens there, but he's a top 30 guy. There are a few kids in Las Vegas who are interesting. So there's Jace Richardson, who's the son of Jay Rich, Jason Richardson. Obviously, like, great athlete, shooting guard in the NBA. Jace is more of a point guard. He's 6'2", definitely a good athlete, but not kind of the jump out of the gym, you know, winning dunk contest guy that his father was. But, you know, he's a top 30 kid. There's also Junie Mobley, who's on that team, who's a point guard. And this guy just has ridiculous range. Like, he's, you know, shooting from 30 feet and making them pretty consistently. So he can definitely just create a ton of space for your offense. You know, kind of like, you know, what Steph Curry does. You know, I'm not comparing him to Steph Curry by any means, but he's got just great range and can hit him, you know, with consistently a little bit on the smaller side. He's 6 foot, 150 pounds. So definitely has to work on the body, but he's a really intriguing guy too. So just lots of guys in the West Coast this year. It's going to be really fun to watch play out.
Yeah, that is. I mean, if you go and look at, I mean, the 2024 class out West is really, it's, you know, certainly for the number of high profile, high sought after recruits, this is like the biggest number we've seen in a while. And, you know, you touched upon Jakari Howard from Donda. I know that Chris Kapko follows him, and I've watched some Donda games. He actually, I mean, he was kind of a crazy, like, a braggart player who just does a lot of talking, but he looks pretty good. Like, I can see him being like a really tough guy in college and just really intimidating a lot of players. So there's a lot of players to choose from, and we'll see how many players we can get involved with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Romer, any thoughts on those guys? I kind of just brought them up, but I'm sure you've seen a lot of them.
Yeah. Yeah. With Junie, he's actually one of those kids that, like you said, he could pull up from anywhere, and he kind of has like that LaMelo Ball demeanor, you know, he take the ball up, slow up the court, but
yeah,
you know, don't second guess him, because he'll pull up that shot and he'll drain it right in your face. He's just one of those players that just knows how to put the ball in the basket. And he was real impressive in the Geico tournament, you know, and he was playing against top-notch competition with the prep schools, and Corona Centennial was there. But, you know, he stood out, and he's one of those players that you got to keep an eye on. But if he could develop physically and change his body up a bit, maybe he'll grow a little bit more. He's definitely a name to keep an eye on. And Jace Richardson, obviously, Jace Richardson's son, and it all goes back to Chase's rule. If they're a son of an NBA player, you give them an offer regardless.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've gone very long, but it's been a great overview of what we're looking at for 2023, 2024. Hopefully, we'll do another podcast here soon. And hopefully by the next time we podcast, we'll have like some sort of news on what's going on with these two open roster spots for USC. Yeah. It has kind of gotten crazy. I think today was the deadline to announce for the NBA draft. So at least now players can still pull out, but at least we know who's said they're in. You know, maybe in the next podcast, we'll go over, you know, who's in, who's not in, who's in with an agent. And, you know, gosh, we'll see if Julian Phillips has popped by then, and any, you know, what else is going to be going in. Romer, anything else you want to say before we get out of here? Who knows when you're on a podcast again?
No, just looking forward to the next EYBL session, which is going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. So that means the Louisville staff and the Kentucky staff is going to continue to see where they are with DJ Wagner. Should be interesting.
Nick, you got anything else?
I don't think so. Just Romer, thanks again for coming on. Great having you. I know I really enjoy the recruiting stuff too, even though I'm not as knowledgeable as you. So definitely had fun with this episode, and hope to get you back on soon.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely make time and I should be on the next one.
Oh, well, there we go. Well, we'll get Romer on as often as we can. All right, guys. Well, until, and who knows, maybe over the summer, we can even, now that it's not depressing, we can actually maybe even talk about USC football. So, all right. So until next time, fight on, everybody.
Fight on.